somebody coming in.
This is Tommy Keene, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
The greatest hits.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
In LA, some restriction applied.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11. Some restrictions
apply. Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of John Mason of Chatham, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
La despensa de alimentos de Catskill está localizada en la parroquia de la Iglesia de St. Luke en Catskill, en la calle William, número 50. La despensa está abierta todos los viernes de la 1 hasta las 4 de la tarde. La comida sana es un derecho. Para más información, bienvenidos a todos a venir. Llamar por teléfono a 551-299-2456. Mirar la página web catskillfoodpantry.org o conectar con nosotros en Facebook en Catskill Food Pantry.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, July 16th. Local early morning temperatures range from 62 degrees in Steventown to 70 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 75 degrees. Air quality will be moderate and pollen levels will be medium. And today is going to be too hot. We hit 92 degrees at 4 p.m. Chance of heat-related rain in the afternoon, but it is low. There are heat advisories out for the region, and there are air quality advisories out for regions to the west. After dark, and especially after midnight, rain shows up. We see a low of only 74 before tomorrow arrives, and we get more rain, especially in the morning. Temperatures reach a high of 90 degrees at 4 p.m. Overnight, rain clears out and we get a low of 73. Friday will be pretty nice. Dew points drop to the low 60s. Skies will be sunny and we see a high of 79 at 3 p.m. Saturday, still dry and mostly comfortable with a high of 82. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 1:41 a.m., high tide at 7:28 a.m., low tide again at 2:08 p.m., then high tide once again at 8:11 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 82 degrees and the tide strength is high. Sunset today will be at 8:16 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:30 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 5%. Plasma winds will be average at 588 kilometers per second with a thin density of less than 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently solar max standard with an S3 level noise floor. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 146, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Public News Service Wednesday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford. The Mamdani momentum withered in the deserts of southern Arizona on Tuesday night. That's the take from the New York Times. They report in a Democratic primary election that pitted continuity and experience against generational change, voters decided to stick with what they knew. Nominating Adelita Gravala, the oldest daughter of Representative Raul Gravala, to fill the House seat of her father, who held it for more than 20 years until his death in March. The Times reports Deja Fox, a Gen Z activist who tried to recreate the youthful magic of Zoran Mamdani's campaign for New York City mayor, attracted millions of fans on social media, but with about 20% of votes, the 25-year-old was not able to translate viral support into victory at the polls. Meantime, protections from having your utilities disconnected could help plenty of Kentucky households during the summer's extreme heat wave, but state lawmakers have yet to pass legislation that would restrict when companies can pull the plug. Extreme heat is detrimental to people's health, especially older adults and young children, says Sarah Pierce with the Metropolitan Housing Coalition.
It is going to cause heat stress, heat illness. People will not have enough ventilation. It can affect not only physically, but mentally as well.
She adds when people lose access to electricity, they can fall behind at work or rack up medical bills. House Bill 326, which would have created both winter and summer temperature standards for disconnections, stalled in the legislature earlier this year. And today marks the 80th anniversary of the Trinity nuclear bomb test in New Mexico. It comes after Congress agreed to include the state in the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act.
RECA was established in 1990, but New Mexicans affected by radiation exposure, known as downwinders, were excluded, while others in Nevada, Utah, and Arizona benefited. Tina Cordova with the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium says the recent action was only a partial victory because those who qualify must apply and be approved for compensation by the end of 2028.
We're going to continue to fight for the communities that were left out. We're going to continue to fight for a longer extension, more time, because we firmly believe that 2 years is not going to be enough for the people of New Mexico that have been waiting 80 years.
I'm Roz Brown.
Next to Connecticut, where AARP is accepting applications for this year's Livable Communities Grant Program.
The grants are designed for projects costing up to $5,000 that improve communities for people of all ages. Past projects include the West Haven Senior Center's new Internet Cafe, shade sales at Thrive 55's Active Learning Center, and outdoor benches for the Flanders Nature Center. Nora Duncan with AARP Connecticut says there are several things people should consider when applying for a grant.
How does this project make something that was maybe previously inaccessible accessible? What problem are you trying to solve for in your community? Think about it in terms of big problems, little problems, but also, what makes your community unique?
I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
This is Public News Service. A new West Virginia law in effect this month increases penalties for people convicted of child abuse.
There's an instinct to act when children are being hurt, but tougher penalties come after the fact, says Jim McKay with the group Prevent Child Abuse West Virginia. He says innovative programs need more funding to help families at risk, from avoiding low birth weight during pregnancy to home visitation programs aimed at educating caregivers about the importance of safe sleep for infants and how to prevent abusive head trauma, also called shaken baby syndrome.
West Virginia actually has more child abuse reports than any other state. It's about 1 in 7 children are reported to CPS each year, which tells us that a lot of families in West Virginia are under serious stress.
The new law increases prison time, which was 1 to 5 years, to 2 to 10 years for any parent, guardian, or caregiver convicted of inflicting bodily harm on a child. This is Nadia Romlagan for West Virginia News Service.
And an environmental coalition says a sacred indigenous site in Michigan was quietly paved over to support construction of Enbridge's proposed Line 5 tunnel beneath the Great Lakes.
Oil and Water Don't Mix, a nonprofit coalition opposing the project, says the Emmett County site was scheduled for additional archaeological surveys because of its historical significance. The coalition's coordinator, Sean McBrady, contends Enbridge did not do the right thing when they didn't report the site before any work began.
Enbridge quietly transferred ownership to Emmett County in exchange for other lands and paid Emmett County to turn it into a parking lot so that this wouldn't disrupt their oil tunnel scheme.
An Enbridge spokesperson said in a statement that the 2022 land swap with Emmett County is unrelated to the tunnel project and was intended to improve land access for both parties. The company also questions claims that the site is sacred. Crystal Blair reporting.
Next to Texas, one of the 12 states in a new national program to increase the number of Americans who have a college degree or a short-term workforce credential.
The Texas Association of Community Colleges is working with Lumina Foundation on its Future Ready States initiative. TACC's Ray Martinez says the program works well with House Bill 8 passed by the Texas legislature that funds workforce training programs at junior colleges.
Focusing on ways to include short-term credentials and workforce programs in this sort of outcomes-based funding model. And it recognizes the critical role that obviously that these short-term credentials play in economic mobility.
HB 8 also allows high school students to receive dual credit towards higher ed credentials. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Then I roll on down the road till I hit a wall. Destination not a goal. Anything's better than the highway patrol. I'm good as gold. Cruise control. Cement makes us build an industry. Said you were the worst. I think I got you beat. I don't have the moral discipline. Just I can't put upon the co-pilot within my soul to take control. Cruise control. No, 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 no. Second floor, the kids clink pots and pans for the encore, and I wonder what to do with you. So I'm heading out the door. Fantasy Island, that's where I've been. Loving a lovely apparition. Now I'm standing on the sandbar. The tide's coming. I try to take care of a garden wooden boat. I wish you sat me in a chair, told me square, gave me a sound nudge. On and on, it's the same old song, but never the same song twice. 10,000 names, the song means the same. I wanna see the bright lights tonight. Bright lights tonight. Bright lights tonight. Bright lights tonight.
Bright lights tonight. You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Rhode Island is given access to a permanent vote-by-mail list to all voters in a bill signed by Governor Dan McKee. The state joins 9 other states and D.C., allowing voters to join a permanent vote-by-mail list. The state's permanent list was previously available, quote, because of physical illness or infirmity, or because I am disabled for an indefinite period. Unlike systems in several other states, however, after opting in, Rhode Island voters automatically receive a mail-in voting application, not a ballot. That application still needs to be filled out and returned with an absentee ballot sent later. Massachusetts and Pennsylvania have similar systems, according to Voting Rights Lab. Arizona, Maine, Michigan, Minnesota, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, Virginia, and D.C. have permanent vote-by-mail lists for any voter. 11 other states have permanent lists for the disabled, and Louisiana has a permanent absentee list available for seniors, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. Some states recently made their formerly permanent list only semi-permanent. Florida's, formerly 4 years, requires reapplication after an even-year general election. Oklahoma, Texas, and South Dakota allow only a year. Your status can be checked at your local election office or state portal if available. We have links to more information on Rhode Island's new law at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
In Minnesota, 71% of those orders were petitioned by law enforcement. I think that's interesting because that's actually lower than a lot of states.
Lisa Geller with the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions highlights early trends from Minnesota's red flag law, which lets courts temporarily remove guns from people deemed a threat. Used more than 100 times, advocates praise it for preventing suicide. Geller says the relatively low share of cases brought by police suggests it's useful for health providers and families. So far, the second Trump administration has asked the Supreme Court for an emergency ruling more than 40 times. The George W. Bush and Obama administrations did so only 8 times. University of Alabama law professor and former U.S. Attorney Joyce Vance says it's corrosive to use the shadow docket to increase presidential power, as when Trump's White House got permission to fire 1,400 Department of Education employees without congressional approval.
Instead of working to enhance public confidence in its integrity, the Supreme Court undermines it by taking these shortcut steps to issue substantive rulings.
Internal Department of Justice texts given to a Senate committee by a whistleblower show an assistant attorney general urging defiance of federal court orders. President Donald Trump's former personal lawyer, Emile Beauvais, told justice lawyers to ignore court orders the administration disagrees with. Beauvais has been nominated for a lifetime appointment to a federal appeals court. His nomination is expected to move forward in spite of widespread objections. Attorney General Pam Bondi is defying pressure for more Jeffrey Epstein transparency. The Republican Speaker of the House is calling for Bondi to release any files, although Trump continues to praise her. At a public meeting, Bondi focused on law enforcement wins, ignoring the charge that Trump himself may be on what's called Epstein's client list. Lawmakers in the Indiana legislature say they're angry about state agency profiting from personal data. Democratic State Senator Rodney Poole says residents should have the right to stop the Bureau of Motor Vehicles from selling their information.
If you want to drive in this state, it's not as if you can go and get your license somewhere else. So at the very least, letting people opt out.
The BMV earns tens of millions annually by selling names, addresses, and vehicle details to third parties. While supporters say it funds agency operations, critics say stronger privacy protections are overdue. Rural economies are again on edge over Trump's trade strategy. Aaron Lehman, president of the Iowa Farmers Union, warns that the looming import taxes and the retaliation they would provoke would raise costs and hurt their sales.
That tariff raises the price for our product for buyers around the world. They're less likely to buy from us, and they're more likely to buy from some farmer from another part of the world.
Iowa exported over $13 billion in agriculture goods in 2023. Lehman says farmers and small businesses are bracing for ripple effects on the local economy. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. You may not know who in your community is struggling with hunger.
It could be your next-door neighbor. It could be your friend.
Eloisa Trinidad is with the nonprofit Chili's on Wheels. The New York-based group has built a network of chapters around the country that share free vegan meals. She says the food is delicious and healthy, and she says her chapter's menu represents different cultures.
Maybe we'll have Thai food one day. Maybe the next day it'll be Indian food. Maybe the next day it'll be Mexican food. We have a very diverse community, and so we really try to bring what the people want to eat.
The program provides food for people in need who do not want to give up a vegan diet, and it helps others learn about the benefits of eating more plant-rich meals. For example, how growing vegetables emits less climate-warming pollution than producing meat and dairy.
When we distribute meals or fresh produce, they'll get a pamphlet on what plant-based eating is and the reasons why we need to move towards a plant-based food system.
But whether or not people become vegan, all can enjoy healthy food that's good for the climate.
We just welcome you in and we break bread together and we share a meal together.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Wow! What a graduation!
I'll say!
But with college behind us, we'll need careers. And good ones.
What about chestnut roasting? People always need chestnuts.
Or begging! I know a place that'll saw your legs off.
Slow down, fellas. I've got a way we can keep our legs and still have a bright future.
Now you're dreaming.
Oh, am I?
Nuclear power!
It's the job of tomorrow. Today!
Really?
Well, that settles it. For all those reasons and more, let us choose an electrifying career in nuclear power.
Greetings, this is Stephen Merritt, and I apparently on WGXC Acre, which I think of as WGXC Hudson, but I don't know. I've never been to Acre.
Welcome to WGXC. I'm Lucy, typically your first Friday WGXC afternoon host, but as you may have realized, it is not the first Friday. I am joined in the studio by a special guest, Lauren Weedman. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you. It's good to be here. It is good to be here.
It's always good to be here. And it's good to be here with you. And this is the first time we're meeting. And actually, this is a different setup than I'm used to. We're on Zoom.
Yes, that's what I got through. I like your studio looks a lot like my rent controlled apartment.
Yeah,
Santa Monica.
So you're in Santa Monica. I'm here in Catskill, where I usually am. What's the weather like there? Because it's hot as anything here.
I don't know. The weather here is so like if it's not. I mean, not to make light of the fire destruction, but if it's not like fire or some kind of disaster looming, it's just California. Yeah, like it's nothing that notable. It's nothing intense. I just got back from Indiana where the humidity was like completely like medical emergency levels, I thought. Oh. But Catskill sounds way better. I cannot wait to be there.
So speaking of what you just said, you're in Indiana. Is that where you're from?
Yes.
Yes. That's where you were born and raised and now you're in California.
Yes. Yes.
And then soon you will be making your way to Hudson. To see us here.
Big world traveler. Yeah.
For a show, for a special show that you have at the Park Theater on July 25th. It's a solo show that you're performing.
Yes, but it's not, it's a, basically this is how it went down. I'm sure this is going to be a stellar PR pitch. That I was going to come to that, to your area of the world. To Hudson Valley area to teach, to do this like, intensive workshop, which I do that once in a while, and I love doing it. Like it's like helping people turn their life stories into theater, and I host The Moth. And so it's also just like a storytelling kind of workshop. So I was going to do that. And just, it's just a habit that I'm always working on some show or some, usually some live performance stuff. And so it was when I got made the plans to teach and I knew there was a theater that I would be close to, I was like, can I get a night to try some new material just to get up and tell some stories and see what goes on? And they very generously said yes. And so then I was like, oh, shoot, I guess I'm doing a show. But it's you know, so I'm just going to be trying out stories and material that I've been working on for like 3 or 4 years, actually. But yeah, I mean, I'm making it sound loose because it is going to be loose.
Well, no, but that's awesome. I mean, that's such a cool opportunity. But back to the theater intensive that you're teaching. So that's August 3rd, 1st through the 3rd. But I've heard it's sold out.
It is. Yeah. I shouldn't have mentioned it. How cruel. yes. Yeah.
It's a small, but that's, you know, awesome.
Yeah, it's great. Really, it's really great. Yeah, I completely love. I always have taught or done, you know, workshops or whatever, and it's such my favorite thing. Is, and it's a little therapy, and it's a little just hearing people's stories. I can't think of anything I love more, really, besides chips and salsa. No, never mind. That was dumb. I don't love chips and salsa anymore anyway. So much sodium. That was dumb. But I feel like such an honor always to hear people's, I don't know, real truths and get some humanity flowing these days. I try to put that in my work as well. And so I'm, you know, I love trying to help other people do that. But I haven't been doing it as much live performance because of just being a single mom and, you know, working here. So I haven't had a chance to really be on. It's been a couple of years since I've been on stage. That's, you know, as a lot of like TV folks are like, that's where I began.
Okay, the show that you're going to be performing, it's pretty much the same as what you'll be teaching people in the intensive. So this will be your version of that?
Kind of. I mean, it's personal stories that I, you know, turn into scenes or turn into, sometimes I've written some songs, or just taking the raw material of, you know, the traumas, the entertaining traumas that happen, and, you know, and turning them into entertainment. And so it's a similar vibe, but I'm of course way, I was going to, sorry, I don't trust my humor this morning. That's not a good place to be in. I was going to say something obnoxious, but I'm way better, of course, than any of those students, which is not true. That's the great thing about the solo theater thing, is just one human being up there, you know. You have to be truthful. I feel like when you're one person on stage, people can sense it so quickly, right? When there's not like real vulnerability or real, you know, and so that element for sure will be there with the students, because that's a lot of what the class is about, tearing them down so they're, you know, everyone gets migraines and then puts together a really great piece of work. But yeah, there are similarities. I think mine is probably more comedic, I'm guessing. But who knows? I don't know what the students have done so far. We haven't begun. We're going to do a couple of Zoom classes. But anyway.
Oh, but that, yeah, that's cool. And then, so you have a couple Zoom things, and then is it it's in person?
Yes.
In-person classes.
Yes. Yeah. It'll be Zoom from here.
When I was reading about you, because this is actually the first time we've met, so you're a comedian, a writer, an actress. All have had this, you know, illustrious career, written books. So you're kind of, all of your material, you feel like, comes from your inner, your story. So your storytelling.
Yes. I don't know why I've thought that when people are like, I'm a storyteller. I'm always like, I'm an entertainer. I want to entertain. I want to make, as my son was saying the other day, this is braggy, so brace yourself. But my son was like, every day. Sorry, what'd you say?
I said, I love bragging. Bragging is the
okay.
best. Just do it. Just go out and do it.
Do it. I can do it in little small bursts, then run back and, you know, and hide and be like, and see how everybody took it. But my son was like, I feel like he was like, you always put people in a good mood, or said something that was very positive coming out of my like 15-year-old teenager's mouth. Not that he's awful normally, but he was talking about this. I'm always like, he's like, even like, you always have to make a joke. You always, and I was explaining to him, I'm like, well, you see, I'm show folk, Leo. I'm adopted and I came out, you know, entertaining so I wouldn't be sent back. So I was, you know, sort of analyzing where that all came from. But yeah, I think that I'm definitely I do believe in stories. It's kind of what gives me my life meaning. It's sort of what I've ended up, you know, worshiping a bit of, just like always trying to make sense of things, always trying to put pieces together, always trying to understand where things come from, why these things happen, what, you know, and digging to try to know myself, which I know is a bit of the art of self-absorption. But it's also, I just feel like if I can truly, truly understand what it means to be alive, I don't know, that just seems like the thing to do with this life is to be, and it hopefully helps me connect with people more and helps form, you know, the show that I'm working on now is a lot about family. And so it's also, I think I'm always looking to sort of connect and find ways that we're, and it sounds so cliche and common, but yet it's not anymore, right? To feel like that we all are basically connected. Because I'm scared to say it because there's so much like hatred, you know, that's going on right now. But
yeah, I mean, for absolutely. I mean, I think that we need more of that. I mean, it at one point was cliche, like you said, but people have to be reminded of that we are all the same. I think that's something that has always fascinated me. I am a photographer, so it's kind of the same thing in a way, is that I'm so fascinated with people and meeting new people and why they make the decisions that they make and how they are where they are and all of that stuff. But also, I've always secretly wanted to be a comedian. So I'm identifying with you so much right now, because it was always my defense mechanism, you know, to just come out and make something funny and, you know, okay, I'm hilarious. Bye. See you later. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It does help get you through the day for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then the same, but I also don't, I've always been not very comfortable in the stand-up environment. And when I was first, I think when I was like 16, I snuck in, or 15, no, 16, so I drove there to a comedy club in somewhere in like Brownsburg, Indiana or something. And to get on stage late night, because it was like rumored that, you had to be 18, but they didn't check. And so I got up and performed there. And it was, the whole environment was like Dante's Inferno. It was hell. Like, it was just, I was the only female. I was underage. I was completely like, oh my God, me too to death. Like, I was, after I got done, every comedian was going to help me out. I'm going to help you out. I got so, I'm going to help you out. And even when I, at one point I was like showing my drivers, I got to the point where I went from wanting everyone to think I was older to, by the end of the night, I was like, I'm 16, 16 years old, people. And it didn't stop, you know, a couple of them. So just growth and just the environment of, so hard to really know anybody. And then when I first started working in television on The Daily Show with people who were real comedians, I felt like everything was about the joke, or forming this joke, or the, even the craft of it. And I'm like, oh, I don't have a craft. I'm just surviving.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to get through things and trying to figure it out. And also trying to make sure that I matter in some way in environments, you know, and like as a female, it's like comedy was my way in, because I didn't have any other boat to take me down the river of being a lady that people liked or whatever, you know. So it definitely has been but the stand-up thing, theater is what I've always really, really, really loved, that medium. And it has to always be political now a bit. It breaks my heart, my soul, my feet, everything, what's happening, you know, that they're messing around with the freedom of, you know, of artists, just as the, oh, because theater to me was the one medium we were allowed to really go for it. You didn't really have to answer to many people. You could really tell your stories. Playwrights could really put their, you know, their, without, you know, whatever, getting, I guess, noted to death like you do with TV and stuff. So the freedom to go all places in theater, to go heavy, to go this, you know, that you don't have in stand-up. So I do think I'm comedy is my thing, but I also, you know, I like the idea of being able to not always be funny, like just now.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, it does happen.
Yeah, you need the ups with the downs, you need the laughs with the cries, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, who cares? And also, I think when I first started doing, I've done solo theater since I was like I don't know, 20, 21. I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah. You said you were in a comedy club when you were 16. How did it strike you originally? So when you were, say, a tween, you know, were you in plays at school? Was your family into it? You know, how did the bug initially start?
No, when I first started, I did grow up, like I just told some costume, I'm doing a guest spot, a lot of guest spots on television. And I'm grateful. I just told a costumer, he asked for my sizes. And the way I told my sizes to him, he was like, well, you've certainly been at this a long time. And I was like, listen, mister, I was Annie in fifth grade. Get ready. So yeah, I was theater. But to me, when I got into, even in high school, I started to feel like there truly were no, like there were no parts for a girl like me. Like there was either the ingenue or I was playing a 90-year-old man, you know, like just there wasn't any play or the funny one, but then there's only one funny one in most of the, you know, shows. And it wasn't exactly me. So I wanted to write things where I got to do more on stage and I got to tell bigger stories. And it's expelling some expelling. Ugh, that's a real great PR buzzword. Watch her expel, no, like exorcising these stories or things that had happened and wanting to get it out of my, you know, get to share them and get rid of them and use the energy of what was happening around me and, you know, and putting it on stage and just getting to do what they wouldn't let me do in other shows. And I didn't like being in only comedies. It would give me anxiety. If it was only laughter, it felt like a nightmare. Like I wanted more, you know, so I just felt like if I could write my own thing. And as soon as I started doing it, it was such a great fit. I think too, I had trouble, I'm realizing now, I don't know what my diagnosis would be, but I had trouble working with a lot of, being around a lot of people all the time. Like just picking, like if something was going, if there was an affair, let's say, with an actor and another, that would absolutely become all I could think about. Do you know what I mean? Like if there's anything weird going on, if I was like, she just got married and she's over there talking to someone, to like, is something going on with them? And then that's it. I couldn't do my own work. Like I'm around other people. I'm like, God, he's so rude to her. Why did she just go, like affected too much by others? So working alone, I could hear my own instincts. I could really, it's been effective. It's, you know, it's also, of course, I'm divorced twice and single and always alone, but otherwise love being a solo performer.
No, I mean, that's like, it's so inspiring because, you know, some of the things that you're saying about being a woman and being surrounded by all these men and not having the, you know, a plethora of parts to pick from that fit you. I mean, you just did it yourself then. I mean, that's something that the vast, vast majority, you know, I feel like that's a reason that I didn't continue. You know, I was in plays in high school, but I feel like, you know, as kind of like the chunky, goofy, you know, whatever kid in the 90s, they were just like, this isn't really for you. And I was like, oh, okay. So I didn't continue with it. So, I mean, that's incredibly inspiring that instead of seeing that as just like, all right, I'll pick a different road, you paved your own road. I mean, that's so inspiring.
I also was in a supportive environment. I don't know if I would have done that in other cities. I happened to be like, I started in high school and I won an award at like some theater conference for like original monologue. And so I every time I got a little hit of yes, it was what kept me. I wasn't so driven that everybody said I couldn't do it, but I did it anyway. Yeah. No, people were going, you should do it. You should do it. I needed a lot of encouragement. And I my career really, I started getting commissions to write shows, which was for Equity Theaters, which was amazing, in Seattle. And that's was the environment that I came up in doing full length, fully produced shows. And I was thinking about that today, how my life has gotten smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And I don't mind it. I just means that's the, you know, I don't have as many tools, let's say, to put a show together. But I'm going from like doing shows in Seattle where I would have, you know, costume designers and set design. I got to really, you know, work with the theater world, which is so fun. And then now when I'm going to do a new show and I don't have a producer. I'm just saying I want to go out there and do it. And it's gone. And I'm going to run all my own sound from stage and everything, you know, I'm going to do everything myself. And even, but I like that too. But Seattle is a nurturing place. Like it was a very unique, like when I moved to Seattle, I remember thinking like, oh wow, women own businesses here. Like I wasn't really hanging with the right crowds, I think, in Indiana. I didn't know that ladies were allowed to do that.
I mean, yeah, you know, you look back, and I have a daughter now, and yeah, I mean, all of that stuff, that a lot of this kind of sexism that I didn't even know was happening when it was happening, you know, you all of a sudden are reminded of all of those things. And it's like, all right, how can I do this differently, but not overcorrect, so it's weird. You know, there's a lot of that going forward. Once you're forced to look at, you know, this vision of, all right, how was I raised? How were other people raised? How do you redo this, like I said, without making it super weird?
You mean with your daughter? Like, how do you?
Yeah, it's, you know, push without pushing too, or encourage without pushing, you know, that kind of thing. And, you know, she's only 12. So sometimes I'm having a conversation with her about the world and, you know, what she needs to do. I'm like, you're only 12. Like, maybe let's just go get ice cream and never mind all that.
No, I do that with my son. I have on my notes app on my phone, I have one note that's all about things that Leo must know. Because I think, well, I can't tell him all these things at once, but, you know, right. He needs to understand, never make fun of someone's music that they love, because it could mean that they love that song because their best friend and then liked it, even though it's a dumb song, and then their friend died. And now that's why, like, things that I'm like, these are big. And I'm like, I can't in the middle of every dinner be like, listen, be nice to your friends. One could get murdered one day. Anyway, yeah. But I want him to know, like, I want him to know what I know, or trying to help him. And that sexism thing, that's a part I've been going back and forth. A lot of times I'm first going to start working on a new show, I'll think, what's the one story I think that I can't tell? And that will be usually I have to spend some time with it to think, what are the reasons why I can't tell? Like, if it's going to hurt Leo, my son, if it's going to make life difficult, then the answer is I can't do it. Thanks, Leo. Anyway, but I can't do so. I answer to that. I believe in that. But then if it's something like this story about the stand-up comedians, I don't really talk about that, because it really was of the generation where I'm like, I don't need to make a big deal about like what men did. Yeah. Like, I don't want to come down on, and I know it's so hard right now. And I know too, that's poor men having a hard time. And so, poor babies. And so, but I'll think, I don't want to jump on that. And when I grew up, we don't talk about that. You know, the thing was to act like that you're, but and then not even realizing it took me a long time, embarrassingly, really, to really get the intense power and strength of women who are telling their stories. Because I think I would, when it first was starting, people were telling stories that being difficult and all male, whatever, I would be like, ooh, she's going to get in trouble. That's right. Good luck getting a date. Yeah. You sound like you're going to complain. Yeah. Like, and even though I fully, and now I, it matters that to me, it's such heroes. And I wish, I feel like, I hope that's a generation thing, you know, that I'm, and it's weird to think that I'm still of that generation of like, we don't talk about it. We just, you know, we maybe write a couple songs and get an eating disorder, but don't talk about it. Like, don't,
I identify with that 100%. You're right. It's like, you know, you don't want to complain too much. It's fine. It's fine. I'll get over it. It's fine.
Yeah. And I don't, even in writing a show, I'll think how much a lot of times in past shows, people, you know, they're subscribers that come to the theater, Equity Theaters. Right. And so they're victims. They don't know. Sometimes they have to go see a show because they, you know, they checked a box and they're going to do one second stage, you know, show, a season, and they happen to, you know, happen on mine. And it was really like, it'd be an audience full of sleeping old white men. And then all the wives, whatever, just like, I always felt like women responded stronger to my show and even would tell me, I really liked it. Now, my husband, he didn't understand. He thought this was a little, but, and hearing all that. And I remember I used to, in the beginning, it hurt my feelings a bit, where I was like, what makes them think I want to hear how they're, someone didn't like it. Like, I don't want to hear that. Yeah. Like, just just move along. But it always was, I realized, I really do connect with a lot of my stuff is wanting to help women and empower, you know, I'm scared to say it now because I'm like, don't want to lose audience. It's ridiculous. Yeah. If someone told me it was a show about empowering men, well, I guess I wouldn't want to go. You're right. Never mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, trying to navigate this where it's not only about pushing people into different groups and separateness, trying to still, you know, wanting to bring some bring it's like when the Knicks and the Pacers just played each other. I can't believe I'm using this reference. This is so not me. Everybody, when I told them I was watching the playoff, what?
No, I was just going to say basketball, of course, fits perfectly in the middle of this.
It so does not. And listen, all my friends, when I was mentioning I was watching the playoffs, everybody was like, excuse me, who are you? Like, since when are you watching basketball? And I'm like, there's something about it's the New York versus the Indiana. And I know these worlds very well. I lived in New York for a while too. And I just, these two, seeing the audience, do they call that the audience? No.
Yeah.
The crowd? I don't know. The people who go see sports things. The difference of the people and the sort of like, we're the cool ones. We're the liberal. Oh, we're the dorks. We're the, you know, the Indiana simpleton folks. And it really is two parts of myself a bit, you know, of like having so much love for Indiana and the folks I know there who, you know, very different beliefs and understandings of the world that I have. My mother is convinced that nobody's allowed to bring anything on a plane. Like anything. Like she's always telling me, like, did you hear, Lauren? They don't let you. You can't bring your purse anymore when you travel. Yeah. And I was like, well, I think you can. Oh no, you can't. And then, you know, that our neighbor, her daughter's husband was trapped on a plane for 9 days. Like just making up stuff like that is that's more old ladies, you know, entertaining dementia.
My mom has the they say. That's hers. Like, well, they say you can't bring your purse on the plane anymore. And you're like, but who are they, Mom?
Yes, yes. And I went to breakfast with them. Mom. Yeah, my mom and a bunch of old folks at some pancake house. And they meet like at 5 a.m., which is like with the time change with traveling, it's just hell. And I went one time, dark in the parking lot, like walking in, like, what's happening? And just all these old people, and all they did was stand around and complain about California. And it was highly entertaining to me because I was like, oh, this is real. I thought this was like, I didn't know that people really, like the first one who got some, I can't remember this guy's name, but it was a cute old guy name. Let's call him Noble or something. But he came up, he said, well, I heard, Liz, you're from California, my condolences. And then everybody started telling me what it was like to live in California. And I was like, oh, wow. And I couldn't say any, I just sat there. And also I felt like, God, I wished I hadn't worn my bikini to breakfast. It looks like I'm so California. No, but I'm so self-conscious about, but I still care about those, you know, my family out there and the people out there and the Christians, the Trump support, you know, I still have this naivete of like the Nelson Mandela quote I used to always throw out where I'm like, not a quote, but like, you gotta know your enemies. You know, we gotta find a way to connect, right? We have to get along. This is so basic, I know, but I still believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, maybe it's basic, but it's something I feel like that's on everybody's minds now is connecting, is and something like performance and something, you know, in an area like Hudson, like this, like the Hudson Valley where I am right now and where you're going to be performing on July 25th.
Thank you.
At the Park Theater in Hudson. There's so many different people. It's such a crossroad of people from all different sides of everything here. And that's why I just think that I'm from this area. So I grew up not in a, you know, artistic, cultured, you know, whatever. It just was what it was. It wasn't part of our daily lives. And then I left and that became part of my life. I became an artist and, you know, all of these different things and came back. And so I feel like I have one foot in both worlds. And it's very important to me constantly to bring people from my family or people that I used to know that kind of look like, oh, that's other, you know, something at a theater is other. We don't do that, you know? And bring them into it. And that's why I think public art and outdoor theater and, you know, all of these things are so important to show people that it's not for one group. It, you know, it's for all of us. And if we had a little bit more connection and, you know, consideration and, you know, could listen to each other. It is cliche, but I feel like people need to hear that now more than
ever. But also, I don't, because of all of those, what you just said, and the stakes feel high like that, especially with theater, I definitely want to make sure, like, okay, I've got them here. This is going to be a good night. Like, I want it to be as entertaining. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't, I've gone to see shows somewhat recently, live theater that weren't stellar, let's say. And I just sit there going like, how dare you take people's time like this? Like, they showed up and we're trying to bring theater back. Do not hurt us here. Like, you have to bring some truth to these performances. Like, it's not a diva show of musical theater character shoes or whatever. Like, if real people are in front of each other and somebody is BSing, you feel it. And it just pulls you away from it. And then you're able to nod off and use the theater as a good nap time. But if somebody is really telling you something that feels like it's real and it's true, you know, real actors who can, you know, touch that, you know, the real emotion stuff can actually, you know, be honest about it, aren't so overly medicated that they can actually feel things, which is a challenge, I know. But I think it's a big deal and it matters. I never take it lightly if people show up to see something. And the fact that I would ever have a crowd of different kinds of people coming from, I think that's what if I may brag once again, that I think that's what I am good at in my sort of the Knicks versus the Pacers. I got both worlds. Like, I know, you know, it's like Midwestern yet still, but still offensive. So that's important.
Well, I think unfortunately our time is pretty much up.
Was that 2 hours already?
It was closer to three.
I go on. Sorry.
But let's go through it again. So your show is July 25th. It's a solo show. You will be performing at 8 p.m. And if people, the audience, the listeners would like more information, you can find that at parktheaterhudson.com. Lauren, thank you so much for being here. It was so nice to meet you. I definitely could have talked to you for two or three more hours. I feel like we have so much in common. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. This was great. I'm so looking forward to being in the Hudson area and at that theater. I cannot tell you.
These are dangerous times.